You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
It has been an eventful year for Iran and Iranians. There was a contested election last June. That was followed by large demonstrations. Those demonstrations culminated in mass street protests in December. A crackdown followed, and scores of people have been arrested since. There has been talk of UN sanctions, and in Washington, there has been an ominous drumbeat for a war against Iran emanating from powerful interests. To help us try to untangle all of this, we are joined by Professor Ervand Abrahamian. Professor Abrahamian teaches at the City University of New York, where he is Distinguished Professor of History at Baruch College. He is also the author of A History of Modern Iran. Hello, Professor Abrahamian.
Good morning.
Now, there were a number of arrests in December last year. What has happened to the people who were picked up?
Well, it's been more like a revolving door. People have been arrested, released. More people have been arrested. Usually they've been arresting people just before there has been talk of demonstrations to take place. So it's mainly been designed to deter people from demonstrating.
And this process has continued in the new year?
Yes. And although, you know, a few people have been put on trial linked to the demonstrations, it's been more like show trials where really nothing much has happened. A few people were given long sentences, but then their sentences were reduced. So it hasn't been as traumatic as one would have expected in light of the mass demonstrations of June.
How about the more prominent people? Have they received more severe punishments?
Not really. The one who received the highest sentence was the man who worked for Soros in New York. He was originally seen as the sort of the key defendant. He was given 14 years, and then it was reduced to 4 years. And I suspect he'll be released within a few months and basically told to leave the country. So at first, everything seems very draconian, but then when you actually see what happens, it's not that vicious.
And what has been the purpose of this, as you call it, a revolving door? What's the purpose of this sort of process of arrest and release?
It's, I think, to deter people from taking part in the demonstrations. And to some extent, that succeeded, because on the anniversary of the revolution in this February, again, expectation was that there would be mass demonstrations against the regime. But that didn't occur. It partly didn't occur from, I think, the arrests, partly because communications were disrupted. And generally, I think the opposition was put in chaos by the government. And, of course, the government made sure that day there were mass revolutionary guards present in the streets to, again, deter people.
And what has happened to the reform movement then in Iran?
Well, I wouldn't say it's gone, disappeared, because I think the people who were basically outraged by the elections, and I would say that it may not be the majority of the population, but a good, you know, 30-40% of the population, that's still there. So the resentment, the antagonism to the regime is still there. It'll come out basically at any opportunity in the future. If there is any sort of other crisis, then you could see that type of the opposition be articulated. But with the clampdown, as long as it's the clampdown's there, I don't see people taking to the streets. What could happen if there is an economic crisis? The opposition could much more resort to strikes. And strikes are actually in Iranian history as important as demonstrations. The 1978-79 revolution actually was brought about both by street demonstrations and general strikes. And so far, the opposition has not been able to muster much of industrial strikes or office strikes.
Now, the United States has criticized the human rights violations in Iran. How would you assess the American response to the events in Iran?
Well, I think the U.S. relations with Iran should be kept separate from what goes inside Iran. It doesn't help the opposition in Iran for the U.S. to come and champion it, because U.S. has this sort of a lot of baggage from the past, especially the 53 coup. So most Iranians, as a sort of knee-jerk reaction, suspect American motives. So even if the motives are good and U.S. is interested in human rights, this is seen in Iran as much more of a sinister interest, and that the interest is really about bringing about regime change and overthrowing the regime. And there, I think most Iranians, including the opposition, wouldn't want U.S. involved that way.
Can you illuminate a little what you mean by baggage? What has happened in the past there?
Well, for the CIA, of course, orchestrated the 53 coup that brought the Shah to power. So for most Iranians, the long dictatorship from 53 till 79 was really supported and brought about by the U.S. So Iranian thinking, U.S. is associated much more with oppression and military dictatorship than with the notion of democracy and human rights.
Now, there's been talk of sanctions against Iran, not just or even mainly because of the human rights issues, but also because of the development of nuclear weapons. What's your feeling on sanctions?
Well, I think what the question of sanctions now is actually completely separate from the human rights issue. It's the avowed reason given, which I think is the believable reason. The U.S. wants the sanctions to get Iran to really be forthcoming on the nuclear issue. And that's done as an alternative to airstrikes, because Israel has been threatening to try to take out Iran's nuclear installations if U.S. can't, through diplomacy and sanctions, bring about some sort of agreement. So it's the sanctions are sort of presented as a much more reasonable alternative to military strikes. My concern is that by doing it that alternative, you either airstrikes or sanctions, you're ignoring a third alternative that is still feasible, which is, I think it's still feasible to get an agreement between U.S. and Iran in which Iran has a nuclear program but gives guarantees, verifiable guarantees to the U.N., that the nuclear program will not turn into a nuclear weapons program.
As you mentioned, there has been talk of airstrikes. There's also been a lot of aggressive language coming from the United States. Is there a real possibility of a military attack against Iran coming from the United States or Israel?
I don't think so. No, I think it's more a bluff and a sort of a threat, but I don't think it's really feasible. And I think so many high-ranking officials, both in Washington and Israel, have nixed the idea. So you had Barak, in fact, in Israel just last week saying it really wouldn't make sense. So I think the important decision-makers have got to the conclusion that airstrikes would, in fact, be counterproductive. It would, first of all, not be able to demolish the whole program. It would then trigger off Iran actually going full speed for a new nuclear weapons program. Iran would then pull out of the nuclear proliferation agreement which it has with the United Nations. And it also, of course, would rally the whole country around the president, Ahmadinejad. And it would also, I think, much more serious, it would lead to Iran creating a lot of problems for United States in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, of course, those are two priorities for the Obama administration, to get out of Iraq and to stabilize the situation in Afghanistan. And to do that, U.S. really needs Iran's support, or at least tacit support.
And how do you think foreign government should handle the human rights problems in Iran?
Well, I think there are governments and governments. I think governments, for instance, Canada, European countries, can be much more outspoken on the issue of human rights, because they don't have this baggage in Iran of their involvement with the previous regime as much as United States. And then I think human rights organizations like Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, are actually taken much more seriously in Iran when they do talk about human rights issues. And they do have a good record. So I think what they say carries a great deal of weight in the international community. When America talks about human rights, it's always seen as that there's a political agenda underneath it.
And on an individual level, what can people do to help democratic movements in Iran?
Well, I think support for human rights organizations. There are also now beginnings of organizations in the West to help trade union movements, student movements, women's movements in Iran. So these are non-government organizations that deserve, actually, individual help from people in the West.
And thank you very much, Professor Abrahamian, for discussing this with us today.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks.
I've been talking with Professor Ervand Abrahamian. He teaches at the City University of New York, where he is Distinguished Professor of History at Baruch College. Professor Abrahamian is also the author of A History of Modern Iran.